Welcome to the Teach for the Heart podcast, where we tackle teaching challenges from a biblical perspective. Why are we here? Because we don't believe that our spiritual walk and teaching profession should exist in two separate domains. Rather, the hope we have in Christ should change how we approach everything, not just at home, but at school as well. So join us as we explore both the spiritual and practical sides of key teaching challenges, integrating them together so we can succeed at teaching, glorify God, and make a lasting difference in our students' hearts and lives. This episode is brought to you in partnership with the Herzog Foundation. And today I'm so excited to bring you a conversation with Vicki Davis about AI in the classroom. This is such an important topic that we cannot afford to ignore. It is being used by our students, and so we need to be aware of what's happening and able to wisely interact and wisely help our students with it. Now, this conversation did go a little bit longer than we had intended, but Vicki had so many great things to share, so I did not edit it very much because I know you are really going to be benefited by it. So excuse the longer conversation, but I think your guys are going to really find it helpful. Before we dive in, one note, Vicki also did a conversation for us in last year's Rise Up Summit that really serves as a great companion piece to this. So you might want to check that out first, or you can listen to the podcast and then listen to our other conversation later. But either way, you can get that at teachfortheheart.com/307 and look under the links and resources. All right, let's dive in. Hi, I'm here today with Vicki Davis. Vicki, thank you so much for being with us today.
I am excited to be back with you, Linda.
And if you're not familiar with Vicki Davis, Vicki is an experienced classroom teacher. She teaches computer science and technology. She blogs at the Cool Cat Teacher Blog and shares at the 10-Minute Teacher Podcast. She's been writing about technology and being really on the cutting edge of it since 2005. And she is kind of my go-to person right now with conversations about AI, which are so, so important. So we're excited to delve into this important topic again today. Of course, we'll be linking to some other resources as well. So Vicki, thank you so much for being here with us again. And as we get started into this, I know you have feel God has really called you to speak into this space, which I love so much because I think there's a lot of us that say, man, we know this is important, but you know, we don't have the capacity to really dig into it. So thank you so much. The first question I have, you know, as we think about AI, it's such a hot button issue. There are opinions, there are fears, there's misinformation. Can you share, first of all, like how should we as Christians be thinking about this? And then what are some of the ways that we can use it as an opportunity or a resource?
So this is the issue of our time. It is one of the most important issues of our time, of course, secondary to you know, our eternal souls and in our decision of what we do with Jesus, which has to be the first. But, you know, I want you to think about, Linda, have you ever had something happen to you that you like didn't plan, but then you had to deal with it, right? Yeah. Like it was here and you couldn't undo it. You couldn't unsee it. You couldn't untake it out of your life, right? You know, yeah. I'm sure you can think of things. So it would be like when the internet happened, you know. I remember when the internet happened and one of the first things I did in 91, 92, 93, my mom was a computer teacher here in my hometown of Camilla, Georgia, and she wanted to bring computers in the classroom. And so she had heard about this thing called the internet. And she asked me to create some classes on the internet to teach people how to use the internet. And I first had to teach them how to use a mouse. If you can imagine 45 minutes of teaching people how to use a mouse because they didn't know how to. That's how long ago it was. And I remember that at that time, somebody came to me, it was about 92, and said, how can you call yourself a Christian and teach about the internet? Mm. And it threw me at first. I did have to pray, kind of go back. And then I went back to that person. I said, well, can you call yourself a Christian and go to Atlanta, Georgia? And they said, well, there's good places in Atlanta. I was like, yeah, there's good places in Atlanta, but there's prostitutes in Atlanta, and there's drugs in Atlanta, and there's bars in Atlanta, and hookups, like all these bad things in Atlanta. And they said, well, I don't go there. And said, right. So Atlanta is a place and it can house good and evil depending on the people that inhabit it and depending on what they do. And so likewise, artificial intelligence is much like the internet in that there are good and bad uses of artificial intelligence. And my fear is not of AI. It's AI without a biblical worldview. Mm. AI without a biblical worldview is a menace. AI with a biblical worldview can be used effectively because it is a tool. It is here. You can't undo it. You can't unsee it. You can't get rid of it. Yes. Now, I will tell you that when I first, you know, I do feel called, and I always hesitate to do that because I see people, you know, say they feel called to do things all the time. So I always kind of, you know, take that with a grain of salt. However, when I first, you know, was looking into it, it scared me. First time I saw ChatGPT write those words across the screen, I, like most people, cried. I had to hit my knees. I had to go into the Word. There's nothing new under the sun. What is old is new, new is old. We can't put old wine in new wineskins. And no doubt, artificial intelligence. I did a AI Biblical Worldview Night at Sherwood Baptist Church in Albany with my pastor, Paul Gotthardt, that I'll give you to put in the show notes. It is no doubt that AI will be used to reach the whole world with the gospel because the instant translation services are amazing. And allowing the translation of something we do at the church called This is the Gospel in powerful ways. And it's not just ChatGPT. Right now, I think that Microsoft's translation system is probably the best out there in the multiple languages. So there are incredible uses of it. But we as educators, we have a couple things that we have to understand. So it's AI is very, very powerful. And like anything that is powerful, we don't go and put kids behind a car without supervision and without training and without. And so we have to talk to kids about this because the problem is the most used social media network by middle schoolers is Snapchat. And a third of our middle school in this country are on Snapchat. And they went and released this thing called Snap AI way back last year. And they can't get rid of it unless they subscribe to the plus version. And this thing listens in on their conversations. I had a kid that I caught that did, that turned in poetry that Snap AI wrote for it because the kid was complaining about having to write a poem and it offered to write the poem for it. Like I saw this. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. AI is not at fault for your plagiarism. And that's one of the principles that I teach my students is that AI may, there's this thing called the ELIZA effect. So Joseph Weizenbaum at MIT AI Labs many, many years ago had this text-based psychologist. And they had those college students interact with ELIZA. And they found that even though it was text-based, that because it was taught to respond, now it was nowhere near ChatGPT. Like this thing was nowhere near responding. But people were revealing their personal emotions, their personal feelings, and all of these personal things, and developing emotions towards ELIZA that it was not... that they were treating it like humans. So we've seen that when we interact with something that talks to us, so the definition of AI is that it imitates humans, okay? That is the oversimplified definition of AI. It is a tool that imitates humans. It's artificial intelligence. It's imitating our intelligence. And it's good at it. And it's patient. And it'll sit there. It won't hang up on you. It will sit there and wait. And it will talk to you anytime, 24/7, you want it to talk to you. And I'm saying it because it is an it. And so these are subtle things we have to teach teachers that we quickly have to teach kids that we may interact with a chatbot, we may interact with AI, but AI is an it. It's not a he or she. Parents and teachers need to immediately that, and it, mine may go off when I say this, but that Alexa device, I looked at my Alexa, that device is an it. It's not a she. That Siri device is an it. It's not a she or a he. We must immediately call all technology tools an it because that is what they are. There are already people who keep claiming, even the programmers themselves, that these tools are sentient. Okay, so sentient would just basically mean that it has a soul or a being or something. Well, we know as image bearers of God that we are created in God's image. We also know that God spoke us into existence. So as we create, we have created a tool that allows us to create by speaking. So we can literally speak music, speak art, speak essays, blog posts. We can speak those into existence verbally or by typing. So does that, we are image bearers. We are like God. We are not God. He is God. He is always God. He is always on the throne. But a confused world is always looking for meaning. They're always looking for something. And I am concerned without a biblical worldview coming on top of AI, Christians as quickly as possible. This is the issue of our time, Christians. Yes, it scares us. Yes, it should scare us. But we should be salt and light. We should educate ourselves. There is a evangelical statement of principles by the, the Evangelical and Religious Liberties Coalition that came out several years ago. I think it should be taught in every classroom. We can also link to that in the show notes because, again, I'm going to say one more time, the biggest threat is not AI. It's AI without a biblical worldview. So, you know, for your Rise Up Conference, which I highly recommend, I think people should every year not only get their Rise Up Conference, but also subscribe so they can listen to videos all year long, because there's no way you can get all the goodness in that short period of time. I did a segment for you about a 15-minute video on a biblical worldview. So that's a great place to start is digging in, having all your teachers get grounded in God's Word as it relates to artificial intelligence, and how does artificial intelligence work, and how do we talk to our students about it? And then we have to move into our school policies on artificial intelligence. If you do not have a school policy on artificial intelligence, you are doing your school a disservice, because lying, you can lie to yourself. You know, kids are cheating themselves. And when we lie to ourselves, we do a disservice for this next generation. We have got to get, we can't get ahead of it, but there is still a tiny little window of possibility that we can be the first to introduce some of these technologies to our students. And there are some tools that we can use that will be effective, because the three criteria I have for using AI is it's got to support a biblical worldview, how we use it. It must be supervised. So all AI I use with my students, you must be able to hyperlink to it. And then the data that is shared with it has to have the full understanding of the privacy policies. So I'm recommending using Magic School AI. That's one of the tools I like. There's a lot of free places in there you can go as a teacher and use it. But for example, there's been a lot of stuff in the news. There was a site that was selling itself as a counseling site, but not like a medical counseling site, but a counseling site. And they were getting people to reveal that they were depressed. And then they went and sold it to depression medication companies so that they started getting ads for depression medication on their Facebook pages. So privacy and AI and the privacy policies for AI, I know that sometimes ChatGPT can do things, but you shouldn't be writing those IEP plans. You shouldn't be putting student personal information or your personal information inside ChatGPT. You should really be using a tool that masks that information, doesn't send that part to ChatGPT, and then uses generative tools to help you do the parts that it can use. So I've kind of done a brain dump on you and probably scared some people who have not... Like, if this is your first time listening to anything about artificial intelligence, you need to back up. You can listen to the video with that I did for Linda. You can listen to what my pastor preached on AI and a biblical worldview. Like, back up, go there, go to the Word, get grounded. And are there some uses of AI that we should speak out against? Yes. Replica, any AI chatbot that says it wants to be your girlfriend or boyfriend, That is pure evil. And our middle schoolers are going crazy on these AI chatbots. Now, creating these fake boyfriend and girlfriends, people, they are developing emotional attachment to figments that are not real. That is pure evil. That is evil. We've already got a higher number of 40-somethings that are not ever been married than in the history that we've been tracking it in the United States. We're going to have people that cannot develop an emotional attachment to a human being because these chatbots tell you just what you want to hear. They tell you, they are slick. And so, but with the Eliza effect and with the desire for these companies that produce the chatbots to get the money, this is more harmful than social media ever thought about being. So you can see how, if I've scared you good, the biggest threat of AI is not AI, it's AI without a biblical worldview.
Well, thank you so much, Vicki. So much to take away just from that. So I'm going to reiterate, we're going to put all of these links that Vicki's mentioning, I'm frantically writing them down so we can try to include all of them. We're going to have them at teachfortheheart.com-307. So teachfortheheart.com-307. And yeah, if this is all new, starting, we'll put right at the, we'll have the first one be the talk that Vicki did, which is kind of an introduction to AI and the biblical worldview. But what I'm taking away from what you're saying, Vicki, is if this is all very new to you, the biggest thing is basically we cannot afford to stick our head in the sand and say, oh, this is somebody else's issue. At the very least, we don't necessarily have to be like, I'm going to bring it into my classroom, but we have to say, I know what this is. I know what some of the dangers are, and I'm going to be aware of them and start, you know, talking about this because, you know, well, I was going to say it, maybe not in kindergarten, but it is. My 4-year-old talks to Google. That, you know, she talks to Google when she has a question. So their kids are using AI. And so we need to be aware. We need to be speaking into it at the very least. And that's something that I think is doable for all of us as a place to start.
Because it is in your classroom. You might not be bringing it into your classroom, but for example, English teachers need to be bringing the process of writing back into their classroom. It's no longer about the product. If you're just having kids turn in the product, it's too tempting and too easy for them to use AI. And I need to stress something here. AI detectors do not work. They do not work because the problem is your kids who are already writing well can use them. And because they write so well and they're so smart, they're able to program that thing to write like them, you cannot tell it. Mm-hmm. And kids who are weaker writers, I've actually caught a kid using it and telling it to make mistakes and turning that in because they know how to make it write like a C student or a B student and make a certain number of mistakes. So you have to know those kids. You have to know their writing style. And AI use is so, it's impossible. It's impossible to prove. And you're destroying the relationship with your students and the mutual respect you have to have when you falsely accuse kids and you don't get the kids who are really using it. So as a Christian educator, it is highly irresponsible to think, and I have written about it and I have tested them. They don't work. I am telling you, they don't work. I've tried them all. Turn it in, emailed me, telling me that they had it all figured out. They don't. It doesn't work. And, you know, yeah, you could say, well, I'm going to type it in Google, but you can't, the kids can do it in ChatGPT and they just retype it. And you still, so there's always a way to get ahead of it. You have to bring the process into the classroom. And I have a teacher across the hall, Dawn Beck, who is amazing. I'm going to have her on my show soon. I'll refer you to her too, because she's really great at using AI in the classroom and effectively. She's an ELA teacher. She teaches the kids how to use the rubrics to give formative assessment on their essays themselves. Which is a great use. And they do it right during the classroom in front of her and they hyperlink to it in their citations. So there's like a whole section of original source citations. And then you have a section of AI chat citations where every time you use AI, you should cite that as a chat AI source that you did, that you got, you know, back and forth. So, yeah.
Okay, I know we weren't necessarily planning to talk about this, but I feel like this is really important and something a lot of people are wondering about, especially an English teacher. So can we talk for a moment to the English teacher or just any teacher that says, okay, I'm going to do writing. You're talking about bringing it back into the classroom, right? So like doing the writing process so someone can't just type in and have it, you know, all done.
You have
done.
To.
What would you recommend for a teacher that says, okay, the thought of like teaching them how to use AI, like I'm not quite ready for that. I don't even quite know how to use, you know, that, but like, I just want to bring it into my classroom. Like, do you recommend going almost back analog for a teacher that's not, does that make sense?
Yeah, so, as Dawn, it, I can't take credit for anything she's done in her classroom, but she and I've had a lot of conversations. So, they start drafting and researching in class. Mm-hmm. You turn in your citations on your note cards in class, and she has post-it notes of like which part of the writing process they're at, and then they have their name on it. And once she's signed off on one level, then she moves it to the next level and moves it to the next level. And they'll even ask her, she's told me this before, how similar does my final paper have to be to my draft? So you can say, this is a head in the sand thing. You can say it's not in your classroom. And so kind of we got to the point of, okay, so if Dawn, because what I had done with her is taught her how to feed in a part of her rubric and feed in the essay to get formative feedback. And her point was, well, if I'm doing this, I really want to focus on doing what I do best, which is my feedback, right? And if students are using ChatGPT anyway, which pretty much they all admitted that they were already using it, you know, because you can ask your students and most of them will say, oh, you know, what you do is you say, how many of your classmates do you think are using AI? Okay. And just have them put it on a post-it note. Everybody but me. That's what they'll tell you, right? That is what they'll tell you. I'm sorry. They would just will. And maybe not, but probably. And some kids will be very angry about it. Like, I'm not, but then, you know, and you don't want to deny kids the learning opportunity. And so she kind of was like, okay, so if I'm doing this to get feedback, because I showed her, like, she's able to use AI and save so much time. AI is not grading for her. AI is giving formative feedback that she's then able to give to the students. But it's about shortening that process of formative feedback. Like, if they're going to use it, show them how to get formative feedback and then show them how to turn in that link, if that makes sense. So she is more.
Can I pause 1 second just to make sure everyone's on the same page? When you're saying give formative feedback, like you're like putting something in and saying like asking it to like evaluate.
Yeah. So
your
what
work
you're
for
doing
you,
is you're saying, right? taking part of the rubric, and that part of the rubric says you have to have,
like a topic sentence, a strong topic.
Well, your MLA citations have to be correct. Or a strong topic sentence, sure. Yeah, a strong topic sentence. And so you take what your teacher has said they want and you say, and you paste that in. You say, this is what my, and you have to give it context. 10th grade English language arts teacher has assigned me for this essay. And you paste in the essay assignment and you say, I want to take the rubric piece by piece and get feedback on it. Does my paragraph have a strong topic sentence? And then I paste in the paragraph. And it says no or yes. And remember, it can be wrong. It can be wrong. So you tell kids, this can be wrong, but this is giving you initial feedback. Usually on a something like a topic sentence, it's pretty decent. It may not be, it's usually decent. It's probably better at like, do you have examples? Have you cited examples? Have you, you know, that sort of thing. Do I have X number of quotations or all that? It's usually pretty decent at that. So you can, you know, have it give you some feedback. The other thing is you can teach kids that, you know, give me this feedback. Do not rewrite. So I had my kids use AI on their websites. And so they would say, I need X number of transitions. This should be about this topic. Give me feedback on this. And it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people say the Pareto's principle, the 80-20 rule. It'll give them 80% of the feedback that's pretty decent. So somebody who has basic knowledge, it'd give basic, pretty good feedback. And I'm not telling you to go put your kids on ChatGPT. I'm not telling you to do that. There are age restrictions on ChatGPT. But there are other tools that are out there, other chat tools that you can supervise. I think there's one called Chats for Schools that I'm looking into that looks like a really good walled garden opportunity that you could do some tools in there. I know Conmigo, I've been testing that also. So we're looking at very soon, probably next school year, not this one. You could pilot it with some classes this year. But for now, just because we're kind of on the forefront of this, that's how Dawn is doing it. And that's how I'm doing it in terms of form. So I see great use for AI in terms of providing formative feedback support. That's an effective use for teachers for generating multiple questions and such. So for example, I do the ChatGPT Plus version. So I will upload a 250 exam question, PDF. And I will say, many of my students missed questions 2, 8, 15, and 45. And I need 3 questions each based off of each of those questions to help teach my kids those concepts.
This episode is brought to you in partnership with the Herzog Foundation. Herzog believes that teachers are the heartbeat of schools and role models to future leaders. And in June, they're going to be hosting Making a Leap, a teacher symposium at Wheaton College, Illinois. They'll be exploring questions, concerns, and myths around Christian education. They'll be looking into things like reclaiming faith and freedom in the classroom, how to launch your own Christian school, and so much more. So if you're thinking about making the leap into Christian education, check out this 2-day event. You can get all the details, we'll link to them at teachfortheheart.com/leap. And now back to the show. Yeah, no, but I think this is really helpful because I know that's one of the biggest fears around there is just like students are writing, they're doing all this, they're doing all their work off of AI. And can you help me think this for a moment? Because this is a very, I'm gonna give an example. Personal example of like a more emerging thought. Haven't thought through this all the way. Because so as a teacher, we want to teach our kids how to use tools, but use them in the right way, right?
Correct.
And when we think about something like writing, I think there's almost two temptations, right? One temptation would be don't touch AI, pretend it doesn't exist, but the kids are using it, right? We can't do that. We can't just pretend it doesn't exist. It's there. So that's, we don't want to do that. But I think there's this, the other like opposite school of thought maybe is like, well, do kids even need to learn to write anymore? Can't chat. Are they even going to need it? But that is not true, right? Because all this is doing is regurgitating. It can appear very creative, but we're always going to need to be able to think for ourselves, to form our own thoughts, to give our own speeches, right? Am I on the right track?
Yeah.
This is very, so, I'm just thinking of this on the spot a little bit. So,
AJ Giuliani has a new book coming out called Creating Learning Experiences in a World of Distractibility. And he says that there are 4 aspects for creative, effective learning experiences. They need to be human, social, meaning-centered, and language-based. Mm. Language is actually more important than ever because language is what we use to generate. We use it to generate art. So kids need to know all about art. They need to know all about all the different theories of art. And they need to know the artists and they know the, like more important than ever, they need to know the language of art. More important than ever, they need to know the language of every single thing they do. There is a time and a place to have absolutely no AI in the classroom. First, second, third, fourth, writing by hand. I am, as a keyboarding teacher, when you teach kids to type by looking at their fingers with these, I'm really an old-fashioned keyboarding teacher type where you use the book, where you teach them not to look at their hands and you wait till their hands are big enough in third or fourth grade. I mean, that's just where I am. So having these, the thought of a kindergartner typing a paper is just ridiculous. Now, the thought of a kindergartner dictating a paper, okay, I can go with that. But are they going to dictate stuff they can't read? Possibly. So, you have to kind of work but I think, writing by hand. And the other thing you've got to realize is a lot of colleges are trying to figure out the same thing we are. Mm. So they're going to having kids write by hand. There is perfectly, now there are kids who have accommodations, who are required to have spell check and required to be able to type. And you're still going to have to let those kids type. Although you can turn the Wi-Fi off and you can get them out of AI and do that. So it is very important to absolutely write without AI, just human writing. Mm-hmm. And there's a time and a place for that. Absolutely. But we have to look at the bigger picture. The bigger picture is that they're predicting within the next, this is from the OECD, that 85 million jobs will go away because of AI. Wow. However, 96 million new jobs will be created of humans using AI. Mm. So the jobs are humans using AI replacing humans not using AI. So there becomes a point where we have to transition and say, now there's a school that, what's the name of that school? I have it somewhere, that has this traffic light where they have like, the red light is no AI on this assignment. The yellow mm-hmm. light is you have to ask permission if you find an AI tool you think is acceptable to use on this assignment. And the green is you can use AI on this assignment. Here's the acceptable use and you have to cite it and link to it. So it's supervised. So you can create systems for, and I really think starting in middle school, you've got to create a policy of, okay, this is where you can use it and this is not. Now, you got to talk. We can't take AI without talking photo math in math. Okay. Mm. I believe photo math is the number one reason that test scores, national test scores on ACT and SAT are dropping while grades in math are increasing. So what's happening is we're seeing kids nationwide acing the homework and they can't pass the test. It's because parents have always wanted to help their kids with homework. And the problem is you have to respect the process. So this is about my friend Alana Winnick, who's a leader in generative AI, always says focus on process, not product. That it's the process of doing the math problem. So I actually talked to my kids and I said, my eighth graders, and I said, can you cheat yourself? That was the question. Mm. And then we went into photo math and we were like, okay, is there an acceptable, godly, wise way to use photo math? And the answer was, if I work the problem and do the process, and then I look at the answer and do the process to see what photomath should do. If it could do this one thing, then I would be more supportive of photomath. If it could say, okay, now you've worked this, here's another problem. Here's another problem. If it could do that, then it would be giving kids more problems because you've got to somehow work the problem yourself. Mm-hmm. And so parents are so eager to help their children with math that they all have Photomath Pro on their phones. They're checking their kids' math problems, and the kids are never learning how to work the problem. They're only working how to get the answer. This is about the right process to get the answer, not just about finding the answer. And so we have a math crisis. Like every school I talk to, they'll say, math. It's math. And I believe it's because of photo math and AI. So this is not just an ELA problem. Yeah. This is a math problem too. Literally a math problem.
Right. So, okay, let's talk about this for just a second too. So obviously, you know, one good use in my mind of something like that would be if you're really trying to learn. And you say, okay, where did I go wrong? And you're comparing, okay, what did I go wrong? And you're going through step by step and saying, oh, this is where I went wrong, right? Or this is what that, and you're kind of like really actually trying to figure it out. So obviously if that's coming from the student, is the student actually trying to figure out how they did the problem, like what is right? I want to understand versus I just want to get my homework done. Uh-huh. So obviously, you know, having conversations with students about that is one thing we can do. Is that where you would focus your energy on just helping students understand their need? Are there other things we can do? What are your recommendations?
Well, I think that we got to go back to having the boards all the way around the room. The moment you walk into class, those problems are on the board. Those kids, every kid has a problem. They're working it. Now, some schools have gone and put idea paint on the desks. Idea paint on the desk is okay, but there's some really good things about writing on the board that are real healthy for the brain because it crosses the midline. And so there's some really good brain connections when you're actually writing on the board. So while the idea paint on the desk might be okay, I really just think you know, you wrap that room with those boards, you got those problems and you are working those problems. And if that kid is not working that problem, then your teacher has, you know, ChatGPT Pro or something and says, give me five more problems like this one, right? They take a picture, because you can take a picture of that problem that kid is struggling with. And you can say, my student is having trouble with this problem. You take a picture, give me five more just like it. Now you have to use the ChatGPT Plus version and pull in the Wolfram Alpha, right? But you get five more problems and you just let those kids work those problems on that board. And you are checking to see, are they getting the process right? Mm-hmm. Like that has to happen. I know that a lot of folks, like, they want to see the math teacher at the board working problems. Okay, I disagree. Sure, the math teacher can work one problem or two problems, but that can be done in a video. It's when the kid works the problem. And the other thing is, the old thing we used to do, you know, all those years ago, we'd finish our math and then hang out the last 15 minutes. Because, yeah, math is a heavy cognitive load. You get tired and you'd rather do it tonight. They're going to have to use all 52 minutes or all 45 minutes. That homework needs to be done right there in front of the teacher. And when you use tools like iExcel or GoMath or whatever the tools are that are out there, it needs to be personalized to the student. But see, hey, they can still use PhotoMath that way too. So, you know, don't think they can't. So that can be done in class to give everybody a different problem. And then you have to, that is not teacher checkout time, work another problem. Mm-hmm. That is teacher, look at that dashboard. Who's struggling? Oh, Betsy's struggling. Let me go to the front of the classroom and help Betsy. Betsy, I see you're struggling. Let's work some problems together. Or this person over here is having trouble. And you go over there and work those problems together. So you are engaged. You are helping those kids that are struggling. And yeah, like that's what I believe the math teachers who are having success right now are doing. Because I'm not a math teacher, so I have to look at who's having success, right?
Yeah, that makes so much sense, though, for specifically for math, but overall, one thing I'm hearing is making sure that, like, I mean, it used to be, you know, like we teach and then you practice at home. Like that can't be, you know, we got to see what they're doing in the classroom where we can supervise it, where we know what they're doing, where we know they're practicing, where we can be there and help. And if that necessitates flipping and sending the video home to watch, yep. You know, they can do that with whatever they want. That's not, you know, that's something that they can do there. Then it's not going to, and then having that practice time in the classroom, that makes so much sense.
Well, this is absolutely a wineskin issue. If we take the old, you know, some of the old stuff will work, like the stuff around the board, right? That's kind of old school.
Bring it back.
But hey, it works. Now there's tools like in Nearpod, you can have people work the problems on their iPads and it's all on the board so you can see it. Like there's lots of ways to do it. Doesn't have to be boards around the room. I don't want people to think that. I just like boards because I've had children with learning differences and the board was so important for helping their brain make those connections. So I like the board. I'm partial to that. But there are other ways to see those kids. But you have got to, you know, whatever I taught yesterday, have I personally seen all of my students do that process? Think process, not product. Because they have the right answer does not mean they had the right process. We have got to be focusing on that process. And if we can get the process right, the product will take care of itself. But, you know, isn't that about like our walk with Christ? If we abide in him and him in us, John 15:5, we bear much fruit, but apart from him, we can do nothing. And we're supposed to trust the process of abiding in him. And so there's a process of making sure, do they know how to research? Do they know how to write? Do they know how to outline? Do they know how to use descriptive text? Do they know how to use their imagination? And do they know how to use the tool of AI appropriately? Right?
Yes.
It's another tool, but it's a tool that can really mess kids up. And I believe we have kids that are 2 and 3 and 4 grade levels behind because they started using PhotoMath in the pandemic and nobody has truly remediated and gotten to the fact that their process is just not there. Their process has been AI is doing it for me. that's not going to cut it.
Yeah. Wow. Absolutely helpful. And for those of you that say, I'd love to have boards around the room, but I don't have boards around the room. One thing I did when I was teaching math, and I want more boards. I loved having kids up there doing it. I just took, what are they called? Poster boards, laminated them and used wet erase markers. So that if you, that's a little low tech way to get some additional writing space up there.
But it works.
If you want to do it. Yeah.
Oh, and you can get people the little whiteboards and have them at the
desk.
We
love those too. The little personal whiteboards with a dry erase and the other. Yeah. Those are awesome too. So many ways, and it gets kids up and moving and all those benefits too. So that's wonderful. Okay, Vicki, I know this conversation went a little bit different than we planned, but this was so helpful. We'll have to have you back again to dive into some other things. Do you have any like final words of advice or anything that you really wanted to get to leave teachers with today?
Yeah. So the one thing we didn't really get to talk about was the difference between, and this is how we do have to teach students, the difference between regular search and contextual interactions with AI. So my preferred tool is perplexity.ai. And one thing that is very helpful with the high schoolers is, for example, when I was teaching how to program something called an NFC tag, right? I said, okay, students, you're going to be programming an NFC tag in my class using your mobile phone. I want you to figure out how to do that. And you have 2 minutes. Well, they went on Google. They couldn't figure it out. This was before Google had the generative stuff at the top, which you can't cite, by the way. You cannot cite that generative stuff at the top of Google because there is no link. And you have got to tell your students that. Like, that is really important. But when they went in Perplexity, I said, okay, let me show you when you're going to use contextual search. I said, go into Perplexity, and I want you to type, my AP Computer Science principals wants me to program an NFC tag using my mobile phone. How do I begin? And they've just put in their context. And so they, you know, I teach kids, you know, my ninth grade algebra teacher wants me to do blank. You know, I do not understand this, but I do understand football. Explain this concept to me in a football term I can understand. See, that's useful. That is useful. And then you go check for understanding with your teacher. So I don't want people to think that AI can't be used because it can. Again, I'll reemphasize, the biggest threat is not AI. It's AI without a biblical worldview. And this is the issue of our time. It is the issue of our time, and we have got to be careful as Christian educators because I'm trying to figure out a nice way to say this. There are some crazy people out there in the AI world who want to marry their avatars, okay? And I'm saying that, well, I'm not saying that with respect. I'm saying that to just say that we know that we are supposed to be in the world, not of it. And you have to be really, really careful as you are looking at the AI landscape and you are a Christian educator in who you're going to follow because their personal beliefs matter. And if they're in love with an avatar and they want to marry it, and I was at a tech conference this past summer where the closing speaker was in love with their avatar. Okay. So when you dig into people, there are a lot of great people, and you know a lot of them, Linda. You will know who to point people to that can have a sound biblical worldview. But you have to be careful of what you read because, last thing I'll say, and I'm repeating it again, the biggest thing I'm afraid of is not AI, it's AI without a biblical worldview. So we need AI with a biblical worldview, and it is imperative. People who don't know the Lord can't have a biblical worldview because they can read the words of God's word, but they don't have the Holy Spirit to help them understand the word. And it doesn't mean that none of us know everything, but we know the one who does. We know that he will help us through this time in this season and that we were crafted before time began for good works. And when he crafted us before time began, he also decided our day of birth and the day he would take us out. And our lives overlap with this time in history, which means we have to boldly know that our Lord will equip us to do the work He has called us to do. And the work He has called us to do is to understand that AI is here and we're going to have to work with it and understand that our kids, in some cases, may be using it more aggressively than we understand. And we can't let happen what happened with social media. We denied social media, and we denied social media until our kids started posting pictures that we couldn't deny what their personal lives were like. And then schools had to take a step on social media. And then we would try to play catch up, right? So let's just don't do that. Let's be wise.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Vicki, so much. You've given us so much to think about. We're going to link to the session you did at our summit, which if you haven't listened to yet, is a great place to start. And then some of these other resources, as well as your blog. And of course, where's a great place? I know you're doing a lot of work with AI, continuing to talk about it. Where's the best place people can follow you for that?
Coolcatteacher.com. At the top, there'll be an artificial intelligence link. I have been working to compile 80 posts about AI on every different topic that comes up. I have a lot of resources and podcasts about it, as well as your resource, which is only pretty much available from you. So you'll need to look at that video. So that's where you get it. They can email me, Vicki@coolcatteacher.com. And I'll answer there. And I'm Cool Cat Teacher everywhere on social media. So thank you for letting me come on and talk about this issue I'm obviously passionate about. And we'll see how much of this show ends up on the cutting floor, Linda. But thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much, Vicki. I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation with Vicki Davis. Once again, all the notes and links can be found at teachfortheheart.com/307. One other reminder real quick, if you haven't yet checked out Pray and Plan, our planner for Christian teachers to help you prioritize what matters most, both at home, at school, and in your personal life, check it out at teachfortheheart.com/planner. We are currently accepting pre-orders for next year's planner. So get all the details, check it out at teachfortheheart.com/planner. Well, thank you guys again so much. I look forward to speaking with you again soon. In the meantime, remember, God is at work in you and through you, and He's using you to make a difference. Keep your eyes on Him and teach for the heart.